As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I talk about our major takeaways from the Sixers two-game set with the Orlando Magic. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, part of the Athletics Podcast Network. We are here recording on Thursday after the invigorating two-game set against the Orlando Magic, which the Sixers split thanks to a
solid... Why are
you going
to pound the Magic like that? What's going on?
You know what? It actually was pretty entertaining. When I was looking at the schedule coming up, I'm like, man, the only time we really get two like back-to-back sets is against Detroit and Orlando, and it's like, can't we get something a little more entertaining? But to be honest, that was a pretty good set. Magic are a pretty entertaining, certainly more entertaining than their record would suggest. I think there on Wednesday night, we maybe saw a little bit why, for as entertaining as they can be, they're still just 20 and 32. They cannot shoot straight all the time, and that night they were 6 for 38, certainly played a factor into that loss for them. But they probably deserved more than I gave them to start. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think they figured some things out. They're super long and athletic. Yep. Markelle Fultz is making freaking free throws now, which is crazy. I mean, who would have thought that the Chick-fil-A challenge, I mean, that had no chance against Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
He was
Claxton,
very good.
Nick Claxton's a threat. Markelle Fultz was not.
No, Nick Claxton. I mean, Markelle Fultz at least shoots it straight. So... Yeah, I just
think... They didn't even get any for Nick, did they? The Nets came in with Claxton and Simmons, and we didn't get any Chick-fil-A out of it.
I don't think we did, which was impressive, because Nick Claxton misses, and of course we're starting a Magic podcast, a Sixers Magic podcast, with some thoughts on the Nets game a couple weeks ago. Nick Claxton misses right and left. Yeah. If you're missing right and left, you got no shot. Yeah it's a tough thing. Anyway, Magic. The other thing, I mean, they have Banchero, really like him. They have Wagner, who, as we discussed last night, I completely forgot that the Bulls basically gave him to Orlando via that Vooch trade. And it made me think, man, like, I do not know pick protections and kind of these trades like I used to. If that was 2016, I would have known in 5 seconds, oh, yeah, Vucevic trade, just because the Sixers were swimming at that end of the pool.
Yeah.
Yeah. The shallow or deep end, depending on how you want to describe it. Now I got no idea, and I'm thinking, man, I mean, Franz Wagner, very nice little player there. And basically, I guess my other thought on them, before I let you say whatever, is I would really like that team to get Wemby. I'm going to be a pretty big dick about like which team gets Wemby and which team deserves him. Like, don't want Detroit, don't want a bunch of other teams for a bunch of reasons. Orlando, I would be perfectly happy with. And frankly, I think... I don't know if it's the best situation he could go to. You know, it's already a pretty long team, but I certainly think that team would be a lot of fun with him on it.
Yeah.
So,
they've got a lot of young players they can trade. They've got most or all of their picks. I'm not 100% sure. They think they've got some extra picks coming in. Don't they have one more coming in there from Chicago? Sort of reiterating
top
the conversation
four are protected.
That me, you, Kyle, and a couple other people were having there in the press room last night. No, they're a young, interesting team. They are still missing a player or two on offense who can really be that sort of piece that gets them all, makes all the other pieces fit. But defensively, they can fly around. They can certainly use their size, athleticism, speed to cause some problems. They did that against the Sixers for two straight nights, 18 turnovers there in that second game, even in the Sixers win. Not all of them were related to Orlando. Like, there were definitely some unforced turnovers from James Harden's spot. He had seven. Some of them, though, like, they were bad and stupid passes, but they were also passes that Orlando was able to capitalize because they can cover up a lot of ground. But certainly some of them were unforced. But they were a fun team. And the Sixers, once again, you know, I think Orlando cut it to 1 point there in the fourth quarter before the Sixers really, you know, pulled away. The Sixers very easily could have dropped both. They could have won both of those games as well. They're up 21 points in the first half in that first meeting. But I guess, what was your overall sort of takeaway here in the split?
I think my takeaway, you know, and again, it was a couple of weird games. You know, last night's game was a slog throughout. The first game was classic Sixers get up by 20 points and just start, as you have said, they F around, which might, like, do they ever not F around when that happens? No. They are awful at that. I mean, that team was begging to get smoked with their offense. And as you were right to tweet out, they found out. My biggest takeaway is that the Sixers struggle with these long and athletic young teams. Yeah. It's almost like that Rockets game. The Rockets, who stink, but at least crash the offensive glass and play, you know, with some athleticism. Like, you can see from time to time that gives the Sixers some issues.
Do playoff teams tend to be slow and unathletic?
No, they don't. I guess outside of a team like Boston, though, I do think the Sixers have more of an issue with these reckless, unathletic teams than some others. You know, I think everybody outside of Embiid, it's just, I don't know. And maybe I'm being a prisoner of the moment and just, you know, extrapolating from a couple of games here.
And I mean, it's not like the Sixers did everything wrong offensively. No. Like, when they were able to get a shot up, like, they got 35 threes, they made 40% of them. Their struggle was not getting shots on the rim.
And I thought their shot quality, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I thought that, and I never really have the numbers in front of me. That's like, what? Isn't that a second spectrum or whatever? So, okay. So I never have those numbers.
Synergy has a variation of it as well.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look into that because usually I just look at the possessions and the isolation numbers. It felt like the shots the Sixers got were pretty good last night. So for them shooting above 40%, good shooting team, did not feel like a fluke. Now the Magic shot, what was it, like 15% from beyond the arc? So that's your game right there. But look, they struggle a little bit with those teams. I like that on a night where they got a lot of really bad, clunky performances. Maxey, awful. Melton, awful. George was okay. I mean, his plus minus was good, so I'd actually give him a little bit of credit, but not shooting the eyes out of the basketball.
He shot like one for six, was it, from three? Yeah.
And I think he was tied with Embiid for a plus 17 on the night. And I do think George did some okay things in terms of moving the ball and getting the Sixers good shots, which is why he was in at the end of the game. I mean, PJ, just foul trouble against Banchero, who should be a matchup that he, you know, they need him for. So a lot of rough performances. What I took away, and I actually wrote about this today, is that I liked that on defense, Joel Embiid did something he doesn't normally do all that much, and he did it well. And on offense, James Harden did something he doesn't normally do, and he did it pretty well. So, you know, like, we are talking before the All-Star selections tonight. Joel, even though he said, when he got asked, hey, what do you think about the All-Star selections tomorrow? And he says, I don't know if I'm going to be an All-Star. He knows he's going to be an All-Star.
He does. Speaking of which, Joel just named Eastern Conference Player of the Month for January. He's won two in a row now. The other guy who won it in the Western Conference, you may have heard of him, Nikola Jokic. I wonder if those two could be in the race for any other awards coming down the stretch. We will see.
It's too bad Joel couldn't have won NBA Player of the Month, because I looked at their stats, in the head-to-head. I think he's got that award. I think he's Mr. January, at least for this year. I think Harden has a really good chance of making it. He said after last night's game, like, my numbers are there. His numbers are there. And
like we said a previous pod, the only reason he would not be is games missed. And I think he's played enough.
I think he's played enough at this point, too. And there's a lot of other guys. So we'll see what happens there. I mean, they get there because, you know, James Harden is Mr. Assist, you know, is like leading the league in assists on a per game basis. I don't know if he's qualified yet, but he is. And he makes a bunch of step back threes. He makes three catch and shoot threes in that game, including a big one at the end where you could tell Embiid draws two at the nail and he throws it to him. And Embiid was fired up after he made that one. It was like, and there's a little bit, have you noticed? There's a little bit of like, finally, man, like, come on. Like, this is too long for this to happen.
Do you know what he's shooting on catch and shoot threes this year?
I do, because I had it in the column.
Oh, did we both include the same? Okay.
It's around 44%, I believe it is.
It's 49.
Oh, 49 now. Okay.
He leads the team in catch and shoot percentage. It's low volume. It's like two per game because, you know, he's still trying to get there. And also, he tends to have the ball a little bit, but it's very, very good. That's per NBA.com. So there might be other, you know, things like Synergy might have him at something slightly different, but per NBA.com, he is at 49%.
He's been good. And usually, as we note on Press Row, most of those catch and shoot threes happen after a very specific action. When the Sixers get an offensive rebound, somebody throws the ball out to him outside. For some reason, he feels confident then. But last night, he made a couple where they drove it and kicked. Embiid on one, Tobias Harris on another one. That's really important. You know, I think, you know, Embiid, who's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, he needs Harden to be comfortable. And it's like you just said, Harden is good at these. He looked good shooting these. Like, it doesn't look weird. I think at the beginning of his Sixers career, he had had so much Houston brain and James ball in his head. He was dribbling through his legs all the time. No, he's a normal basketball player now, for the most part, where it looks good. So he needs to do it more. So that, I think that was a positive sign for him on the offensive end.
Yeah. And the other takeaway you're talking about is Joel Embiid switching a lot more. Pretty much anything that involved Banchero and Wagner, the Sixers switched that in the second half. And both of those players for the Magic had off nights. Banchero ended up with 13 points on 5 for 18 shooting. And Wagner ended up with 13 points on 6 for 15 shooting. And they combined for just 1 for 13 from 3-point range. And that struggles from the perimeter certainly helped. Joel Embiid joked after the game that Wagner did not score against him. Technically, I think that was not true. I think Second Spectrum counted one basket against Joel Embiid for Wagner. But he gave the young player props. He gave him props for continuing to go at him and for his competitiveness.
It was a nice little statement from him.
Yeah, he seemed genuinely like a little bit in like an awe that's cute kind of way, but he seemed genuinely like I like that kid. Like he's a good, talented player, and I like his attitude. It seemed pretty genuine.
And I think that's how the Sixers felt about that team. It was like, I like that team where, you know, they're not as good as us now, but they gave us a lot of problems. They're very competitive. Yeah, so he was... Yeah, the Sixers, they switched 3 through 5, and Joel was up to the challenge. Like, that's not what he's normally good at. And Joel will tell you that as well. Like, he'll say, look, I need to be in drop coverage most times. I need to be around the rim. That is where, statistically, I make the biggest impact. That is where I don't have to run around like a madman in regular season games when I'm scoring 35 points a game on the other end. And for the most part, you stick him there, even if it gets a little bit frustrating when... You know, bubble Kemba Walker's popping threes.
Yeah,
man, that seems like a long time ago. But whatever, you know, guards are and wings are popping threes. The Magic, they had their only offense really was a pick and pop with, you know, Wagner and Banchero kind of running the pick and roll, and you know, a bad 3-point shooter, but somebody who was wide open if the Sixers were in drop. So they decided to challenge those guys 1-on-1, and Joel did a great job.
Yeah, and Trez in the second half did a pretty acceptable job just in that 1-on-1 matchup. He had all kinds of mistakes, especially in the first half where he would fall asleep. He had one where he was trying to deny someone like 30 feet from the basket, and you went back and you watched it, and you said, how do you think this was going to end up? How is this going to work out in your favor? There was that one miscommunication in the third quarter between him and Thybul, and that one was strictly on Thybul's part, and I didn't see it live. I just saw Trez respond and sort of like clap at Thybul, but then he went back and you watched it, and before, you know, as the play was unfolding, he was signaling to Thybul, he was yelling at Thybul, and Thybul just kind of like ran through a stop sign at third base. They went back and sort of had that exact same thing happen to them a couple possessions later, and they got it right, and it got it worked out. But I thought Trez held up pretty well just in terms of, you know, keeping Wagner off, you know, just putting a body on him and moving his feet in a way that Trez doesn't usually do all that well. So I give him a little bit of credit bouncing back in that second half, because part of that run came, came with Embiid on the bench there early in the fourth quarter, and they held up pretty well. And it's weird giving Trez defensive props, but I thought he did a reasonable job in the second half after a pretty disastrous first half.
He grabbed a couple rebounds too, which was nice. I just have the picture of Thybul in my head of Thybul as a baseball player, just running through stop signs at every possible.
He plays a little bit like Victorino now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, Victorino, one of my all time favorites. Yeah. He's one of my all time favorites because after, in interviews and press conferences, his verbal crutch, like mine is and like, his was very unique to him. His was no questions asked. That's what it was every time. No questions asked. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Thybul just trying to score from first on a single would be a very funny kind of.
It seems like something he would do. Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd be that slap hitter who also didn't walk but tried to be overly aggressive on the bases. That's Thybul.
Matisse Thybul is drawing interest around the league now.
Yeah, reportedly. We'll see. We have the trade deadline coming up in exactly a week. A little light on the rumor front, but we will have more time to get there. Have been some rumors there about Thybul not being untouchable. I question whether he was actually ever untouchable. A player like Matisse Thybul is never untouchable. Just gets reported that way because of leverage. But outside of that, the rumor mill has been pretty quiet. It's pretty much been Thybul or ducking the tax. Those two are not necessarily mutually exclusive. We will see what the Sixers end up doing, but we'll have more on that in a future podcast. Offensively, Joel, go ahead.
I do think that, I don't want to get into too much. I do think we have an interesting discussion to be had about Thybul and what they do with him this year. Yeah, that's all. And so that's a little preview for the Saturday or the Monday pod, whatever we do.
I agree. All right, going back to Embiid, ended up the night with 28 points. On 9-for-17 shooting, had 20 of those 28 points in the first half when he was obliterating Orlando's front court, played a little more of a setup man role down the stretch. What did you think of his overall game?
Thought it was a throwback game in a sense. And the reason why was in the first quarter, my God, how many post-ups was that in a row? That was crazy. The guy who's been, railing against post-ups and I got to be at the elbow and I see the court better. Man, he, towards the end of that quarter, against Mo Wagner, who is, I think Mo Wagner's up there with his like top nemesis.
Yeah.
Nemesis. Not in Mo Wagner could stop him way, but right. Mo Wagner flops every time.
Yeah. Did you see the one where he was like practically in the stands?
It was like watching The Matrix. Yeah. It was absolutely crazy. Yeah. It was like the guy's running up the walls. Flying back in midair. I remember too, the funny thing was I made a note of the play in my, on my computer. So I take my eyes down for a second. And then I realized after it was over, I was like, wait, why is Mo Wagner sitting in front of the Sixers bench? He started on the left block on that play. I think when the foul was committed, that was something. I will give Mo Wagner credit though. In the game that Sixers lost, he got Joel. First off, he scored on him a couple of times. But he got Joel for an offensive foul, and Joel had 5 fouls. At the end of that game, I really think he got into Joe's head where he was just like, Joe was like, oh my God, if I drive, he's going to flop and he's going to get the call. And it was, I don't know, it was a little bit of a mind F by Mo Wagner, where I think 25 times in his career that hasn't worked out. Yeah, he might have drawn an offensive foul on Joel, but Joel scores on him with ease, with pleasure, with all of those things. But I think he got to him a little bit. And Joel said, after the game, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, he's like, yeah, I mean, when you're playing a guy who flops every time. So, I think he has a little more respect for one of the Wagner brothers than the other one. But who's to say?
Yeah, who's to say? One of them is a throwback player, too.
Yeah. It was a throwback game for Joe, though. It felt like, I don't know, it felt like a 2019 good game for him.
A bully ball Brett era game.
And 28 points, right? Yep. Bully ball, really good defense. Plus 17 when the bench unit just stunk without him, was good with him. It just felt like a lot of ways where he was very good. And I thought he played overall a very good game, but not in the, I'm just going to smoke you from the mid-range and just be this 7'2" Kobe Bryant. It wasn't like we've seen for most of this season. That's all.
Yeah. And I thought down the stretch, you know, he didn't, I don't know how many he had in the fourth quarter. Like I said, he had 8 in the second half. I thought he created a lot of really good shots for his teammates. Not all of them went in because you had, you know, Melton and Tyrese, and although Tyrese made a big one down the stretch, and George, who didn't really shoot all that well. But I thought the Sixers got pretty good looks. I thought he was center for a lot of it. He was pretty dominant there in the first half in a throwback kind of way. And between Wendell Carter and Wagner, and they just do not have the size to match up with him like that. And I thought he asserted himself pretty well. Overall, a good game for Joe. I guess going back to Monday's game, any long-term concerns there or just something that happens over the course of a season?
It really did feel like maybe they weren't partying the night before from the NFC championship game, but they had just, Joel had just beaten Jokic. They literally were all there with Kevin Hart and Michael Rubin and all of those people. I don't know. It felt like they didn't treat the game with the seriousness that they needed to. I will say, after that game was over, we talk about Joel, you know, how he's usually, you know, grouchy after losses. He's not in a good mood at all. He was fine after that loss. I think that was a very, okay, it happens sometimes. And you know what? They did, with a little bit of three-point Jedi defense, they did get it back on Wednesday. So I don't know, man, like it almost came too easy to them. You know, they got up so early in that game that they just got so lazy with their passes, these pick sixes. I mean, I guess the other issue with the athleticism that was really apparent in Monday's game is that they got smoked on the glass. And that's, you know, that's the issue. Like when they get stops and rebound, they're going to be fine for the most part. But when they don't rebound, like against a team like Orlando that just has the athleticism advantage, the skill advantage they don't have really in any spot, maybe Boncaro against Tucker, definitely Boncaro against Tucker, but everywhere else, no. That's the only way you can lose to them, and they just did all of the bad things, the transition defense, the turnovers, but also the offensive rebounding.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that was, you know, one of those games where, like, for the most part, I think it happens. They didn't shoot great from the perimeter, only 11 of 30 from three-point range. They had those turnovers. And when those two things happen and they get killed on the glass, like, their defense isn't frequently going to bail them out. And, you know, are you going to lose too much sleep? That a team that was really good at protecting the ball for most of January had an off night. A team that was scoring at will for the most part through most of January had a little bit of an off night, or at least not an exceptional night shooting from the perimeter. Not really. The larger concern to me wasn't the turnovers or the shooting or any of that. It's the defense. And the defense was bad at points of that game against an Orlando team that really struggled to score in half court. But I don't think it's necessarily anything new of a concern. It's sort of like when they were winning 20 out of 24, they were sort of, you know, winning in spite of their defense, and it sort of caught up to them when they had an off night. To me, that game wasn't too concerning.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You get a kick out of Embiid saying, we gave up on Fultz too early.
Well, especially because they legitimately traded him for like one of his favorite players on the team. The pick that became Tyrese Maxey. Not sure you really want to make that trade, but I think
the Sixers did okay. Not last night. If last night were all 82 games, I'll take Markelle Fultz over Tyrese Maxey. Last night isn't all 82 games.
I think Joe's just mostly like he wants to stick up for a guy he considers probably a little bit of a friend, or at least a younger brother type. I don't read too much into that.
Yeah, I guess my only thought on that is that he loves trolling Colangelo for those moves he made. That was not a Colangelo. It was a Colangelo pick, Fultz pick, but the trade was an Elton one. So.
Right. And the trade ended up being a good trade.
It was an awesome trade. Elton's best trade?
Well, Butler. It certainly wasn't Tobias. Butler could have been, but they let him walk. Butler was actually a really good trade. Yeah.
Markelle Fultz for Tyrese Maxey eventually. That's a nice sequence of events. I know that you got to get the pick right, and it might not always be that easy, but that's pretty nice.
I don't like to look at him that way too much because there were probably easier ways or other ways you could have gotten that 21st overall pick or a pick to select Tyrese Maxey. It didn't have to be the 21st pick. I would typically look at it like, did you sell low on Markelle? Yes. You just happened to hit not like a single or a double or a triple with that 21st pick. You hit a home run with that pick. So it looks a lot more lopsided than maybe it otherwise would have. But give them a lot of credit. It ended up, you know, they're definitely in a way better spot because they made that trade. Let's put it that way. But we don't need to relitigate the Markelle Fultz era because that can get depressing real quickly.
It can. I mean, this was another point that got brought up to us in last night's game. I don't know if it was Kyle or somebody else. Markelle Fultz is better than Ben Simmons right now. The hell?
Which is depressing on two different levels because it's not like Markelle Fultz is a fantastic, easy fit right now.
No.
It's just the other guy has gone way backwards. One of them never learned how to shoot and the other one forgot. It's a crazy fucking world. Crazy world.
The one thing I will give Markelle credit for, and against the better player who he got traded for, you could see it, especially because he has that height advantage against him. Man, he moves like a gazelle in the open court.
He really is.
What a fluid athlete. And I think
it's really easy to remember why you loved him so much coming out of Washington. Yeah. It's real easy. Real easy.
Brett used to always talk about how his arms, he basically had to
unfurl his arms, unfurl he would say. Him. Yeah. He had a 7-foot wingspan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he's going to play in the league for a long time. He might never be on a good team, but I'm not worried about him sticking around in the league. The other guy a little bit more so. I guess he's just a really, really good athlete. And yes, when he could shoot, that's a dynamite player.
And a pretty good passer, too. And the combination of those two, especially if you have a mid-range Hezzy pull-up Jimbo. Oh, man. I love that kid coming out of college. I think at one point I said, this might have been one of my dumbest things, although it's hard to say because it's gone in so many different ways. I think I said Ben Simmons had more upside, but Markelle Fultz had the higher floor, which then Markelle forgot how to shoot completely. Was barely an NBA player and now has worked himself back into being a contributor. It's been a wild journey, but there was a lot to like about that overall skill set. A lot to like.
Unfortunately, that was his first game in Philly since the trade, too. So he's also been super banged up. So, I will I will take Tyrese Maxey, who stunk last night, and run with him. So it's, you know, overall, I think it was a little bit of a frustrating couple of games.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not getting too worked up over them. You know, I think you look at it and you say, it probably deserved a split. It seemed like the Magic took it. I think the Magic also took it more seriously. Like, that's a team that clearly has played better as Markel, as Cole Anthony, as Suggs. Like, the Sixers smoked that team when they didn't have any guard play back in a two-game series without Embiid, Harden, and Maxey. So they've clearly become a different team. They absolutely own the Boston Celtics as well, so it's not like just that the Sixers have trouble with them. But you could even see on their bench, like, Jamal Mosley, you should feel pretty good about. Like, that is like a young, energetic team. They're clearly, you know, cheering for each other and kind of, I don't know, it seems like they're emphasizing the right things. They're emphasizing process over results, like, especially like guys miss shots, but they're hustling. Like, those things seem like they're getting pointed out. And so that's what happened. And the Sixers are a team that wants to play in June. And sometimes playing those teams in mid-January sucks. It's not fun. So that's what
happened. And, like, they're really young. Like, what's Boncaro? Like, 20? Wagner's, like, 21? I think Suggs is right there. Like, they're a young core. They have a lot of... Even someone like Markel, you look up, he's only 24. Like, he's not, like, an old player. He's just been around for a while. They've got a lot of youth, a lot of room to grow, a lot of picks coming in. They have to sort of, like, steal a phrase, they have a lot of optionality going forward, and it'll be interesting to see how they rearrange that team. Not all of their players will be there when they are good, but I think they will eventually be good as a team. It'll be fun to watch. Yeah.
I definitely think in a couple years, they're going to be good. They have those picks. Yep.
This wasn't like a great two-game set for the Sixers. They didn't play at their highest of levels. Grabbing a split, like, they didn't exactly lose a lot of ground either when you've just gone 20-4 over the last month and a half. A little bit of a letdown is somewhat expected, or at least understandable. And now we will see what they do here as they go out on the road. They won't be tested right away. They have the Spurs in San Antonio, and then they have the Knicks in New York. So it'll be a little bit before they really get tested, but it's coming up soon. It's coming up soon.
I will say they do have Spurs and Rockets losses on the ledger.
They do. That's true. That's true. That's a fair weird point. One.
The Spurs loss came when the Phillies were playing like game 4 of the NLCS. So
yeah, we didn't really care. We barely talked about it more Sixers podcast.
I remember watching that Phillies game afterwards. I went to an establishment afterwards to watch that game, and which was an awesome game. Phillies hit a bunch of home runs, came back, you know, after somebody had a tough start in that game. Whatever. And there was a bunch of people who just said, they're going to fire Doc. And then I said, probably not. And they just said, all right, let's watch the Phillies.
The only thing people cared about with the Sixers at that time of the year. And quite frankly, now with the Eagles, not a whole lot of interest in the Sixers either, but it's coming up shortly. The Eagles season will end one way or the other. We all hope one specific way, but either way, it will end. And the Sixers will be right smack dab in the middle of a really tough stretch of play. We've even got a couple here we've got one against the Celtics here coming up, which at least that will be a good, another one against the Knicks.
Two against the Knicks, yeah.
Well, two against the Knicks. I actually meant the Nets. I just can't speak. We'll see how many players are there for that game. And then Memphis. There's a lot of really good games coming up. Not
Cleveland
just
game
that,
coming up, too.
Not just that break. Crazy schedule in March, but even the latter half of February, largely at the Wells Fargo Center, there are some good games coming up. So I'm interested to see. Excited to see how that is. All right, so I think that will probably be just about enough here for this one. We'll keep this short and sweet. Next podcast will probably be a little bit of trade deadline talk and speculation, because not so much you can take from a game against the San Antonio Spurs. Although, like Slop. You pointed out, they did beat the Sixers earlier this year, so who freaking knows? But the main storyline there is not what happens on the court, but who is sitting there on the sidelines for the Spurs, and you can only talk about that so much. We'll start our trade deadline chatter in earnest there in the next podcast. Thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.